This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and so you can find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Paris Paloma. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Alisa Ali at WFUV. Alisa, I love Paris Paloma so much. I love the track Labor. Having her in the studio was so powerful. She really packs a punch with her music. What was it like to have her here and to get to interview her about this first album, this first baby that she's put out into the world?
It was a really special project. It's a really special album. It's a really important album, I should say. And so I feel grateful that she's released it into the world, and it has fueled so many women globally. It's incredibly thoughtful, and she, as anyone would be, is as surprised at the impact that it's made. Whenever you put out a piece of art, I think that it's that powerful. I don't think the artist ever really, like when they're creating it, they can't know how far it'll go. And right. Wow, this one went so far with that song Labor. You know, it's been used in myriad ways, and I believe all for good. And she was incredibly well-spoken and very generous with her time, and a really thoughtful, engaging person. When I was talking to her, she was looking right into my eyes. See, this is something you can't get on radio. You don't know that she's looking directly into your eyes, but you maybe can feel it from the way that she speaks. And she really speaks from the heart, and she speaks from experience.
Yeah. We're going to hear three songs, all of which are incredible. But the first one is, I think, particularly special right now. What is this first track that we're going to hear in this session today?
I have to stop myself from going work because it's called Labor. Here on WFUV, it's Paris Paloma.
Why are you hanging on so tight to the roof that I'm hanging from? Off this island, this was an escape plan. Get out for the time, did so let me go and dive into the waves below. Who tends the orchards? Who fixes up the gables? Emotional torture from the head of your high table. Who fetches the water from the rocky mountain spring? And walk back down again to feel your words and their sharp sting. And I am getting tired. The capillaries in my eyes are bursting. If our love died, would that be the worst thing? If somebody I thought was my savior sure made me do a whole lot of labor. The calloused skin on my hands is cracking. If our love ends, would that be a bad thing? And the silence haunts our bedchamber. You made me do too much labor. Apologies for my tongue and never yours. Busy lapping from flowing cup and stabbing with your fork. I know you're a smart man and weaponize the false incompetence. It's dominance under a guise. If we had a daughter, I'd watch and could not save her. The emotional torture from the head of your high table. She'd do what you taught her. She'd meet the same cruel fate. So now I can undo this mistake. At least I've got a try. The capillaries in my eyes are bursting. If our love died, would that be the worst thing? If somebody I thought
A live version of Labor here on WFUV from Paris, Paloma, a whole cacophony of sound coming out of Studio A. Thank you so much, Paris.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for making this very cool, very important, very fun song about labor. Emotional labor, that is.
Yeah. Labor started as two different songs, really, but then I kind of realized that they should be the same one and not separate. One of them was written about just this emotional exhaustion that I had been experiencing in a relationship with someone. And I'd also been thinking a lot about just how much work women do in order to be loved. And watching, you know, the fate of so many women who I care about and love in their relationships and being treated in ways that they don't deserve in order to feel what they feel is love. And those two songs, I realized that they came from one and the same, you know, sort of system of like sort of exploitation of women's emotions, exploitation of women's labor. And I made it into the same song.
It's such an interesting struggle that you've put a light on, because it's kind of an invisible struggle that people deal with, and it's almost invisible to us. I almost don't even realize it's happening until after the end of a day you're exhausted. And you see that with a lot of people. I mean, I don't know a single person, especially a woman, who cannot relate to this song. And it's really become like a rally call to women to kind of realize what's happening. What has it been like to experience so many videos being made with your song as the backdrop and your song being used to literally rally women to fight for their own rights?
It has been so important to me. The song has been picked up by so many women of different backgrounds, of different levels of privilege and different levels of struggle, many of whom have experiences that I have never been through. And because labor also applies, as I sort of said, to that emotional labor, and women do that day in, day out in the effort to be humanized by not even people who are their opponents, but by people who are supposed to love them. And therefore, it's become this movement. I am so grateful for this moment that's happened around it. You know, I attended the Women's March in the UK about a month ago. And when I turned up, Labour was blasting over the PA system. And we marched in protest of violence against women, in protest of this, you know, sort of epidemic of misogyny and violence that I think is becoming unignorable now. And it very conveniently has been ignorable for a very long time. And the exploitation of women in all forms, it can never be separated from that violence.
There is a great video that you've done for the song. And then there was a little bit of a remix video that you put out where you included different fans singing along. And I cannot believe how much feeling those women had in their faces and in their throats while singing along to that. It's really, really powerful, and it must be so powerful to hear those words being echoed to you. They must sing along every single time you perform it.
Yeah, whenever I play it live, it is just this wall of voices of women from all these different backgrounds, young girls and older women who all kind of commune at my shows. And that is the most joyful part of what I do. And the cacophony version, yeah, not only did we make a video, but we you know, released this new version of Labour, including the voices of all these women who had been singing along, and we asked fans to sing on the track, and they did. And there's hundreds and hundreds of voices on there, because the release of the initial Labour, I couldn't have predicted how huge that would have gone. And that is, I in no way take credit for that. It had the moment it had, and it continues to have, because of the shared feeling of women being done with the deal that they have at present. And that is something that women of all experiences can relate to. And I realized that Labour had become something that it wasn't initially when I wrote it alone in my bedroom as one single woman, one single person. And I just thought it was really important to have a version that reflected the unity of all of these voices and how much power there is in the unity of all of these women.
One thing that I think is really important to note is that some people listening to this song might only take away that they can only see the anger and the bitterness, but there's so much joy and unity, as you mentioned. And when I see people singing along, I see them identifying with the song, but I also see them dancing. And there's a great video on your TikTok where people just spontaneously busted out into a beautiful dance after your show was over. I mean, that must have just been magical. And you didn't know that was going to happen. Can you take me back to that time?
That happened. It happens repeatedly now. It happened for the first time at a show in Paris. And I just finished the show. I came back to the green room. I was putting my boots on. And my tour manager asked, he just ran backstage and was like, they're like dancing in circles. And my fans affectionately refer to themselves as the fairies. And they had like linked, and he showed me a video of them that he'd just taken. And they had like held hands. They were dancing in these circles, like all these women. And it was so amazing. I just ran out to join them and I like danced in the middle. And I'm interested to see if it continues in the US. I feel like it's needed, you know, to feel that solidarity between women right now. I'd be thrilled if they continued it over here, but it's been something that continued, and as the venues have got bigger and bigger, the dancing circles have got bigger and bigger, and including all women who want to do that and all the people who come to my gigs.
It's like an anti-mosh pit.
It is. And the thing is, it's so important, because with songs like Labour, you know, we see a lot of songs that discuss female rage. That definitely comes from a place of women feeling like they have not historically been able to exhibit anger. We also know we really have the capacity for it. But something I find in talking about female rage is that it can become so mythologized, so like deified, that people can forget that women shouldn't have to be angry. And we have this enormous capacity for joy. And that is how we're meant to feel. And although there's a lot of anger in my music, because it's my outlet, it's how I make sense of my own struggle and injustice, and it's what makes me feel like I have some agency, that this anger that's in my music, that's not all that there is. And then you come to a show and women are linking hands and they're dancing together in these fairy circles, and that's the point, that's what it's about. And when they sing along to a song like Labour with such joy, it is because they are finding, you know, solidarity and community, and that is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, this point is as good a reason as any to get into another live song from you. And spite is a good reason. That's a good motivator at times as well, as we will discuss in this song, As Good a Reason, from the new Paris Paloma album, Cacophony, which is out now. We're going to get a live version of it in Studio A.
Of my eyes, and I'll never close again. Oh. when she stopped her cigarette. I felt compelled to inquire for success. How do you do? How can you be so in love with yourself? Tell me please, 'cause I need help. She said, every time you are succeeding, there's an old man somewhere seething, and spite's as good a reason to take his power. When you hate the body you are in, oh love, you're acting just for him, as he counts his gold and green in his ivory tower. I fear it lines his pockets love, so I take that rage and bubble up and put a drop into his cup of wine. You don't need him, you don't need me, with that poison bottle you'll be free, but be damn sure you don't mix it up with mine. There's an old man somewhere seething, and spite's as good a reason to take his power. When you hate the body you are in, or love you're acting just for him, as he counts his gold and green in his ivory tower. I fear it lines his pockets, love, so take that rage and bottle up and put a drop into his cup of wine. You don't need him, you don't need me, with a poison bottle you'll be free. But be damn sure you don't mix it up with mine. Oh, be damn sure you don't mix it up with mine. I met a woman with lips so red, always remember the things she said.
A live version of As Good a Reason here in WFUV's Studio A. Thank you so much, Paris.
Thank you. Thank you so much for playing it.
That was such a great version of the song. And we've been talking a lot about your album. And that one comes kind of in the middle of the album, right? Now, sequencing, very, very important in this record because it's almost like chapters in a book. And this is kind of like your first book, your first LP, right?
Yeah, yeah. I sort of. Yeah, it's my first album.
Yeah. I mean, I think you originally wanted to be a writer. Did you originally intend on writing books? And now you've switched over to
music? I wanted to be a creative writer.
You are.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the difference?
It's not really.
It's harder, I think, to be a musician because you have to add music.
Yeah. It's just the plot is your life.
Yes, exactly. Oh, it doesn't have to be autobiographical, but the first album usually is, right?
Yeah.
So it's a lifetime in the making, the debut album always. But this one comes in the middle. So can you set us up the different stages,
yes,
aka songs, chapters in this album / book?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's four or five different sections in this album. It's such a autobiographical record, and it kind of tells a story of my mental state of the last, you know, 2 to 3 years, and like my young adulthood and the first years of my adulthood. And the first section of the album deals a lot with like the aftermath of cataclysmic events, of trauma, of grief, and the exploration of self and loneliness and this general feeling of isolation or this like desolate landscape that it kind of portrays.
Can I just stop you for a second and tell you that I love the chaos?
Oh, thank you.
I mean, just that opening track is so much fun. My Mind Now.
Yeah.
It must have been so much fun to put that one together, sonically speaking.
Yeah.
Maybe not psychologically speaking.
Yeah.
But sonically, it must have been a lot of fun.
That was one of the only ones that I've ever written that I didn't write on guitar, because I was just playing in Logic with looping my vocals and layering it. And I'd been through, you know, some things that I was processing that felt like my mind wasn't going to be the same again, where something actually is so traumatic that it affects your brain chemistry. Yeah. And I wanted to put that across in that song because I felt like, You know, it felt like when I looked behind me at my past, I couldn't go back there. It was just glass. And no matter how much I pressed, I just wasn't the same person. And my mind now speaks to that. And it speaks to this just like electrical storm of emotions. And the fact that like since this period of time, I'd not had like just peace and quiet in my head. And the noisy mind, the idea of having just like noise inside of your mind is a running trope in the album. And then, yeah, the songs that follow, they're these desolate explorations of the lack of community I felt. And some of that is sort of like reflections on the world around me. But some of that is like my inner world as well. And yeah, so following on from that, the next few songs, they speak, you know, overtly to patriarchy. There's this presentation of an antagonist. Songs like Drywall, songs like Boys, Bugs and Men and Labour. It's impossible to write as a woman about your mental health without writing about patriarchy. It's like just a big tear in a map of your life that crinkles everything. And there's a lot of grief there at the time, you know, thinking about what I could have been had like patriarchy not been a thing. This power system that creates like immense damage in women's lives and in their heads, and that was true of mine, and those songs, you know, speak to gender-based violence and experiences that I'd had. But moving on from that, the next few songs, you know, if the last ones were presenting an antagonist, the next were presenting these like sort of mentor or protagonist figures. And we have Knitting Song and this presentation of external love through women and through community. And as good a reason is that it's about the intergenerational wisdom offered to younger women or by older women and how important that is. And it was at a time where I was just becoming so disillusioned with beauty standards, with like body positivity. I shouldn't need to constantly feel like I have to be beautiful and buy things and pay all this money so I can do that. I was sitting and thinking, who is benefiting off of my self-hatred and who is manufacturing my self-hatred so that they can profit off it? Because there are people, and most of the time it's a white man. And that's an awful thought to have as a woman, that by hating yourself and by hating your body, you are lining the pockets of someone who wishes that upon you. And I wrote as good a reason about that, about, you know, if self-love for self-love's sake is too hard in the present, start with doing it out of spite, and that might get you there.
As good a reason. Absolutely. I love that. And then you have Hunter as well, which I know you're going to kill it on this live version. Talk about the power that you've harnessed now for this one.
Hunter is one of the most vulnerable songs on the album. I wrote it after a really, really dark period of my mental health where I felt incredibly existential. There was a lot of, you know, thinking of that I wasn't worth living, I wasn't worth like being alive. And you become so desensitized to that thinking when you're struggling that much, when you're in the trenches and you're like in the depths of depression and anxiety, and I have OCD, and that is such a difficult thing to get out of, especially when you're young. And I, you know, have dealt with it throughout a lot of my teenage years and my young adulthood. But I started reaching a point where I was sort of healing, or, you know, having this like non-linear recovery, when I started to gain a little bit of distance from just how bad I had got. I was sort of so shocked at the thought of how I had this contempt for myself and contempt for life, and it lacked so much compassion. And it was, you know, thinking about myself in a way that I'd never think about someone else. And I wrote Hunter, you know, this song about a hunter and this great big animal who kind of come across each other, and they're both starving and they both have great need to, you know, kill the other one. But the important part of it is that they're both of their decision not to, and the song doesn't really go into why, further than they see themselves in the other one. It's this metaphor, I suppose, of the warring parts of myself at that time in my life, and just how, you know, cataclysmic and difficult that felt. But then the reflection upon that, and that's the story that the song tells.
Mm-hmm. And it feels, what does it feel like to be on the other side of that struggle and now singing the song about the struggle?
It's bittersweet. I have a lot of grief for the person that I was, because you feel, you know, when it's your younger self, you feel, you know, almost motherly in a way, or like you just want to reach back in time and make it better. But the song was so instrumental in the unpacking of just what had happened in my mental landscape.
And we're going to hear a live version of Hunter right now to close out our session with Paris Paloma. And it is a song, all these songs, off the brilliant Cacophony album, which is the debut LP from Paris Paloma. Thank you so much for joining us here in Studio A.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Stayed my hand then, with dagger held and sheathed, blade pointing in its side. I've been set upon by a predator. It was just looking for a meal. I saw ribs and fearful eyes. What is it that stays my hand now, with so much misery that I could mercifully put an end to? For the animal I let slink off into the undergrowth unscathed. Do I not fear death, but just pretend to? For it was starving, it was hungry, but had eyes too close to let me. If you were easy to kill, I would have done it already. Was haunting all my steps, questioning all my choices. With that dagger held unsheathed, I felt sick of my contempt. For you were lonely, you were like me, like some outside force had sent me. If I was easy to kill, you would have done it already.
That was Paris Paloma performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Paris for joining us in our studio and to Network Music Group. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, Matthew Ellersick, and Emerald Reagan. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Diana Juarez and Lily Paterzo. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Elisa Ali.